This is Ozarks at Large. If you've been waiting for a novel set in Miami with four good friends, a python, an orangutan, a Haitian family seeking a better life, an inexplicable car audio system, a wedding tilting toward disaster, brownies that inspire an odd friendship, and the line, hyperactive poo-flinging banshee, well, your wait is over. If, less specifically, you've just been waiting for the next crime-tinged novel from Dave Barry, then more good news. Insane City is now available. Even better news, Dave Barry is coming to Fayetteville. He'll speak at the Fayetteville Public Library April 12th at 7, sign books afterward. He's with me on the phone now. Dave Barry, welcome, and thanks for taking some time to talk.
Thank you, and thanks for that incredibly descriptive summary of my book.
Well, let's talk about that line from page 104, hyperactive poo-flinging banshee. This refers to an idiosyncratic behavior in an idiosyncratic city where you describe a lot of people, I think both in fictional Miami of your novel and the real Miami, adopt monkeys and think this will be a good idea.
Yeah, people in Miami have a very strange notion of what would be an appropriate household pet. Monkeys is one example. Sometimes tigers, which, I mean, you would think most people would figure out, even though tigers are very cute when they're little, they do grow up. And apparently this does not occur to everybody. Probably our most flagrant example of late has been pythons. We have a python problem. These are Burmese pythons. They're not supposed to be here. They're supposed to be in Burma. I don't know where that is, but that's where they should be. And instead, people bring them here as pets, even though these are snakes. They get to be, they're constrictor snakes, get to be 15 feet long, even longer sometimes. People somehow think that that's a good idea to have in their house. Then eventually, I guess they run out of crack or whatever, and they go, oh, my God, I've got a giant snake. And they let it go. And the result of that has been that the Everglades are infested with Burmese pythons. They have no natural enemies out there. And it has gotten so bad, there's supposedly 100,000 of them or more, it's gotten so bad that the state of Florida, State Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, stepped in and held a contest called the Python Challenge, which could only have been thought of by the state of Florida, the same state they can't figure out who it's voted for in an election. Where we invited anybody who wanted to come from anywhere to come down here and kill our pythons. It did not work out. Unfortunately, the pythons won the python challenge, but we tried.
But as you so ably point out in your novels, the fact that Florida and Miami and South Florida have idiosyncrasies and people who have odd choices for hobbies and interests, that's just great for a novel.
It is. It's ideal. And I want to stress that I know that every place has idiosyncrasies and every place has weird behavior. But I just contend there's no place where it's as densely populated with that kind of person as Florida. And it is an ideal environment, very target-rich environment for a fiction writer. The great Carl Hiaasen, you know, probably the king of the South Florida wacko writing, Florida wacko, has said you don't really need an imagination to think of a plot for a novel in Florida. You just need a subscription to the newspaper. And whatever you think of, however weird you think it is, something weirder will happen, but, you know, in time, and make whatever you wrote seem kind of tame.
So many of these elements play out in Insane City. It's a wedding. It's Seth, who is kind of this good-natured schlub. He's getting married to a very intense young woman who comes from a very wealthy family. As I mentioned, and you mentioned, there's a python, there's an orangutan that ends up with...
There's an orangutan who is not only plays an important role in the plot, but he becomes sort of a love interest in the book. He gets out of his cage. He's been in a cage a long time, if you know what I mean. So he's a lonely orangutan, and he's not really that hung up on any particular species, if you notice. He's open to an open relationship. Let's put it that way.
And how can we say, an aphrodisiac for him is having attention paid to him.
Yes, well, or being anywhere near any female of any species really is good enough for Trevor. His name is Trevor.
And we like Trevor. We get to know Trevor.
I love Trevor. In fact, when I wrote the book originally, Trevor's role was fairly minor. The story is about a wedding that goes really badly wrong, and the hero of the book is the groom, and he has a number of problems, the obstacles placed in his path. And early on, one of them is that he loses the wedding ring, which was trusted to him by the bride, who's and who hasn't trusted him with much else.
It's his one job.
It's his one job, is to show up with this ring. It's incredibly valuable. She's very rich. Her family's rich, and she has had made this incredibly valuable ring. That's all he's supposed to do. Unfortunately, when he arrives in Miami, he and his groom posse, they try to get to the hotel. They make an honest effort. But Miami is the kind of city where you could get in a cab and the driver will not know where your hotel is. And I say this because it has happened to me here in Miami. I don't understand why we have cab drivers who don't know how to find things, because you'd think that would be a fundamental requirement of the job. But here in Miami, that's not always given. Anyway, they end up in South Beach instead of where they're trying to get, which is Key Biscayne. And they end up at a bar called the Clevelander, which is a real bar, although it's got nothing to do with Cleveland. And one thing leads to another, and Seth loses his wedding ring that night. And through a series of circumstances I won't go too far into, because I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but it winds up in the hands of Trevor, the orangutan, who resides at a tourist attraction called Primate Encounter. And this is one of the many things Seth has to do in this book, is try to get his ring back from Trevor. But I really originally anticipated Trevor as just that one scene where Seth, the groom, has to get his, you know, I thought it would be funny, you know, mm-hmm. in the middle of the night, the groom has to get his ring back from an orangutan. But I like Trevor so much. He was such a great personality that I kept him in the book, and he ends up, as I say, playing quite an important role.
You know, there is this sort of Rube Goldberg mechanism going on with how many things go wrong.
Yeah.
Because we've heard just a hint of the problems.
And that really, that is just one minor issue that Seth has to deal with. And, you know, the thing that the author that I most love to read for fiction is P.G. Wodehouse.
Mm.
And that's I love those Blanding's Castle romps where there's 23 characters all trying to do something different, everybody confused, nobody knows quite what's going on, bouncing off each other sort of frantically. I love that kind of plot. So that was kind of my model when I wrote this book.
Well, but the thing with a Rube Goldberg machine, of course, is for it to all work, it all has to work separately. And so all these parts have to work, and you have to, it seems like to me, walk toward the edge of ruining our suspension of disbelief, but you never do. It all makes sense how this can happen.
Well, you kind of have to lure the reader step at a time into okay, this could happen, then this could happen. Because I know when I say, well, an orangutan gets the wedding ring, it sounds like, well, how'd that happen? You know, but you have, you know, that's your job as a writer. First this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and lo and behold, the reader is at this point right there with you. Yeah, the orangutan ends up with a wedding ring. I can see that. You know?
Of course he's in the parking lot of a strip club.
Likewise, you could have a pirate ship being chased by a tour boat, and that which ends up in a fight involving chicken McNuggets, frozen chicken nuggets being fired from a cannon. That could happen.
It all makes sense when you get there. There is another one of the subplots and things that are keeping, and actually is responsible for the transformation of the main character, Seth, to take him from likable slacker to something different, is a Haitian mother and her two children who are seeking a better life in the U.S., which doesn't sound on the surface as funny and doesn't really play funny in the book, but it serves a big purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah. Really, the heart of the book is a very serious story. And it's not a serious book. It's a comedy. But Seth, our guy, our hero, who's kind of a loser, but certainly not an ambitious human being, not an issues guy, not a cause guy, ends up on his wedding weekend rescuing this Haitian woman who, because of the law, the immigration law, if she is turned over to the police, she and her children will be sent back to Haiti. That's the way the law works here in Miami, or in the United States. And so he has this, suddenly he's responsible for this Haitian refugee family. And that is kind of the beating heart of the plot. And Seth, the way Seth handles that responsibility that is going to basically threaten his wedding on his wedding weekend, is what sort of drives the book in the end, and what Seth has to do about that. Surrounding that is a great deal of comedy, but you're right. At the heart of it, it's a pretty serious, that part of the story is serious.
You know, I think back to Big Trouble, which was your first novel intended for an adult audience, and you have Puggy, who is the sort of homeless drifter who lives in a tree. You seem to have a soft spot for underdogs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you really, I think most books, if you're going to get people to want it, to root for your characters, to care about them, you have to make them, you know, less than perfect. They have to face obstacles. They have to deal with problems and overcome challenges. Otherwise, really, what's the story? If it's just, you know, this perfect person has a perfect day, there isn't really much of interest in that. You know, which is why people read. It's why people watch TV. Why people watch Downton Abbey? You know, because they know that in every episode problems are going to arise, and these characters they've come to know will have to deal with them, and how will they deal with them? And so, sort of the essence of keeping the story interesting to people is to put problems in people's paths. And it's good to have an underdog, I think, anyway, as your protagonist, because that's where people's sympathies lie, and that's what they identify with.
Should point out that Insane City has a lower body count than Downton Abbey.
Yeah. That's true. Nobody dies in my book. In fact, there really isn't that much violence. There's some threats of violence, and there's some people who are not that wonderful. But it isn't one of those books where, like, the bad guy is shooting everybody.
No. No. It's funny, in the foreword to Big Trouble, which is when you launched this part of your career with these kinds of novels, you point out, you know, younger readers should stop now because you've done so many books. And you said, because you have some characters who use adult language, you as the writer didn't want them to, but as characters they did. I have heard other writers talk about sometimes characters doing things they didn't expect. Does that actually happen?
Yeah, the first person to tell me that was one of my heroes, Elmore Leonard. And I got to know him. And one night, I ended up in this long conversation about, you know, writing characters. And he was saying that, you know, you will not necessarily know, and you'll see this in his books, you'll not necessarily know when you're writing the first chapter or two which of these characters is really going to be important, which one is just going to disappear. And you'll also not really know what they're going to do. You think you do, but sometimes they take on, you know, once you started writing them, you feel as though you're more channeling them. And they do things you don't expect them to do. One of the characters in this book, her name is Cindy. When I started writing the book, in my mind, she was a minor character. And she ends up being a major character, kind of because of the way she acted.
Right.
Which I know sounds weird, because obviously I'm writing the words she's saying, I'm writing what she does. But, you know, you sort of have this image in your mind of this person, what would that person do? And the person sort of tells you, well, I would do this, I would say that.
So there's this actual evolution?
Huh?
There's this actual evolution of the characters?
Well, yeah. Especially in this case, the main character, Seth, he changes. I mean, and he really changes. Most of the other characters don't so much. But he learns a major lesson, discovers something really important about himself, which I knew from the beginning I wanted to have happen. I wanted two things. I wanted the character to change, and I wanted the ending to be kind of a surprise. So that was the only thing I was really sure of. I knew how I wanted it to end, and I didn't want you to expect it, and I knew that I wanted Seth to become a different person in the course of the book.
Finally, you mentioned Carl Austin, you mentioned Elmore Leonard, and I know that you're friends and a former bandmate of Stephen King. It seems as though, just from looking at the blurbs and the conversations and interviews I've read, that you guys do not have professional jealousy of each other.
I don't. You know, I guess you could. It can happen. I mean, in the book world, I know if you're in a specific genre, like I think murder mystery writers pay a lot of attention to where other murder mystery writers are on the bestseller list and how, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I think I've always been kind of comfortable with my role in life as a writer. I was mostly a humor columnist, not really a book writer. So any success I have with books makes me happy. And Carl is my friend. He's been my friend for a long time. I'm not going to be jealous of Carl's success. I'm happy for Carl. I love Carl's books. You know, he's a good guy. He's my friend. So I don't view it as a competition. People could buy Carl's books, and they could also buy my book. It's not like Stephen King. Now, if I wanted to be in a competition with him, I'd be an idiot. Since he could write a grocery list and sell 20 million times more than I can. And he's also a really good guy, you know, and also a completely different genre. So. Yeah, it's easier. It's like anything else. You're not really, if you think about it, you're not really competing with anybody else. There's the audience out there is vast. You know, there's room for a lot of writers.
The new book is Insane City. It's available now. Dave Barry will be at the Fayetteville Public Library April 12th, beginning at 7. Dave Barry, thanks so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.